Thank you, Blessing Njonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A political analyst say resolving the ZANU-PF succession dispute will not be easy as opposing factions brace for tomorrow's crucial Politburo meeting following First Lady Grace Mugabe's attacks on Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
I don't think it will help ease the tension. It will actually worsen the tension.
The International Monetary Fund is projecting Zimbabwe's economy to slightly grow by 3.2% in 2015 from 3.1% this year.
And the Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA Zimbabwe, says it is concerned by recent attacks and threats against the privately owned media by ZANU-PF and government officials, including the First Lady, Grace Mugabe.
Fireworks are expected at tomorrow's ZANU-PF Politburo meeting in Harare when two warring factions in the party come face-to-face in a make-or-break meeting ahead of the crucial December elective congress. ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo could not shed light on the agenda of the meeting, referring all questions to Party Secretary for Administration Didmus Mtasa. Mr. Mtasa, however, did not pick up his mobile phone. Party insiders told Studio 7, however, that top on the agenda is the feud between First Lady Grace Mugabe and Deputy President Joyce Mujuru. The alleged attacks on the Vice President by the First Lady have widened factional fights in the party. There are allegations that the First Lady has taken sides and is now supporting the faction led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, which is engaged in a fierce war against a rival faction led by Mrs. Mujuru as they battle to succeed 90-year-old President Robert Mugabe. Some senior party official, Mr. Sifas Msipa in particular, told VOA Politburo members want Mr. Mugabe to address the issue.
The party is also expected to discuss calls by the Mnangagwa camp to empower Mr. Mugabe to appoint his two deputies and avoid an election. But the Mujuru camp, which has the upper hand in the ZANU-PF electorate, is resisting the move. The party will also discuss its failure to hold elections for the Central Committee due to conflict. Political analyst Shakespeare Hamauswa tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that resolving the ZANU-PF succession dispute will not be easy.
We are expecting the political to debate that either to endorse or to question the legality of Ms. Mugabe to attack ZANU-PF ministers and the other members such as Zipin, since she is just a card-carrying member. Yes, she was endorsed for taking the leadership of the Women's League. But that alone doesn't give Ms. Mugabe the right to attack in public. And it has become un-ZANU-PF. ZANU-PF has not been known for washing its dirty linen in the public. Even Mugabe himself, I don't think you could do that like what the wife did. So the people are either going to further attack the VP or to propose an action where maybe they can propose to have the police investigate such alleged corruption allegations. Otherwise, also, they can just leave it like that because she never mentioned any name. And Mugabe has been known for saying media issues that were said in the media cannot be taken as the official position. He has done that during the Lancaster House negotiations. So sometimes they can just leave it, the issue like that. So it depends with what Mugabe is going to do. But there are a number of possibilities that are likely to take place.
But do you think making Mr. Mugabe appoint his vice president instead of party members electing them will help ease the tensions in the party?
I don't think it will help ease the tension. It will actually worsen the tension.
That was political analyst Shakespeare Hamauswa, a lecturer at Mulungushi University in Zambia, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Mulungushi, Zambia. Meanwhile, as the Politburo will be meeting First Lady Grace Mugabe, we'll be hosting some sections of the war veterans and war detainees at Hemazoe Orphanage in Mashonaland Central in what some party insiders say is a show of force and demonstration of her growing influence in the party. Outspoken war veteran leader Joseph Chinotimba told Studio 7 that they have petitioned the First Lady to deliver a letter to the president to improve their welfare. But the war veterans are said to be divided, with some backing Mrs. Mujuru, a liberation war icon. War veterans leader Jablani Smanda says he has not been invited to the Mazoe meeting.
Still with ZANU-PF, Chris, the unfolding ZANU-PF political drama scripted by the First Lady Grace Mugabe has many observers and the public on tenterhooks, wondering how things are likely to play out when those that she has so virulently attacked decide enough is enough. The First Lady, accompanied by officials from the Emmerson Mnangagwa faction, escalated long simmering tensions recently when she repeatedly criticized Vice President Joyce Mujuru and their allies, calling her corrupt and accusing her of attempting to overthrow President Robert Mugabe. The Mujuru camp has largely remained silent, and their silence has many wondering what they are up to. For perspective, Ntungameli Nkomo reached a Pretoria-based commentator, Denise Lumakaplana, the first person to write about Grace Mugabe's political ambitions. Makaplana says it is possible Mr. Mugabe wants his wife to succeed him.
It may not surprise any astute political observer that after this long journey, Mugabe has settled for his own wife as a potential successor in office. Because conditions on the ground make his obvious but possible successors untrustworthy, because they might be tempted by international forces and some of his many enemies to turn against him and dissolve his legacy, persecute him and punish him in his old age. So it shows you the corner up to which Robert Mugabe has been pushed, to the extent of trusting his wife as a successor.
One question that seems to vex many people is whether Grace Mugabe is a person of her own or she's being used by the Mnangagwa faction.
She has her own agenda. Most of the people that we think are using her are actually her strategic allies, who might actually to some extent be being used by her as much as they are using her for their own objectives. So what I want to caution us on is thinking that she's powerless and she's just a weapon in other people's hands.
What can we expect next from Grace Mugabe in this very interesting political drama?
I would want you to observe how she acts like what I would call a verbal suicide bomber. She is someone who is sort of wishing to demolish her opponent, but in the process, demolishing herself or self-assassinating herself, in that she's someone who might destroy her enemies and herself in the process. To the extent that you might think this is someone who's advised by her potential enemies, people who want her to say things that they themselves cannot say in public. So that's one possibility, that she can actually consume herself in her own fire. There's also the possibility that her violent language can actually create a climate of fear that might provoke assassination.
That was a Pretoria-based commentator Denise Lumakaplana on the line with Ntungameli Nkomo.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA Zimbabwe, in the meantime, says it has noted with grave concern recent attacks and threats against the privately owned media by ZANU-PF and government officials, including the First Lady Grace Mugabe, which the media watchdog says poses serious risk to the safety and security of journalists. These attacks assumed unacceptable proportions during the just-ended First Lady's rallies, says MISA Zimbabwe in a statement. While the media is not immune to criticism, the First Lady's inciting statements, particularly against journalists working for the Daily News at a ZANU-PF rally in Marondera on 17 October 2014, was indeed frightening, as experienced and recounted by the affected journalists, says MISA in the statement. Daily News journalist Fungai Kwaramba was among the journalists at Rudaka Stadium in Marondera when the First Lady let rip her venom against the journalists working for the publication, demanding that they identify themselves. According to media reports, the atmosphere at Rudaka Stadium was highly charged given the enmity among supporters of the different factions within ZANU-PF who could easily have taken the law into their own hands. Mr. Zimbabwe urges politicians and public officials who wield immense power to exercise emotional restraint when addressing their excitable supporters, mindful of the fact that journalists have the constitutional right to cover events as they unfold without hindrance, and let alone threats from the mighty and powerful.
We move on to economics, where the International Monetary Fund is projecting Zimbabwe's economy to slightly grow by 3.2% in 2015 from 3.1% this year. The IMF made the forecast in its October Regional Economic Outlook report for Sub-Saharan Africa, which was released yesterday. According to the report, growth in Sub-Saharan Africa is expected to remain strong at 5% in 2014 and to further firm to 5.75% in 2015, driven by sustained infrastructure investment, buoyant services sector, and strong agricultural production. It is envisaged that Zimbabwe's economy currently experiencing lackluster growth due to structural economic challenges will benefit from the overall growth on the continent. The report projected Zimbabwe's real per capita GDP growth to rise to 2.1% next year from 2.0% this year. The country's total investment as a percentage of GDP was seen declining to 12.9% in 2015, down from 13.7% this year, while gross national savings that are in the negative territory was slightly improved to minus 13.4% in 2015 from minus 14.4% this year.
Results of a SNEP survey by the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute in Mashonaland West show that the majority of people in the province are not aware of the government's economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, and that many consider it a ZANU-PF agenda than a national policy. Ivan Chifera reports.
In a report titled Knowledge, Attitudes and Perceptions Towards the Zim Asset Policy in Mashonaland West Province, ZDI said 472 people approached for the interview said they were totally ignorant of the policy, while 384 who claimed to know something about the program were not significantly knowledgeable. The level of awareness is high among males at 50% than females at 48% and is high among the urban bloc at 56% compared to the rural areas at 46%. According to the survey, only 1% of the surveyed people had read the policy document and 13% believed its objectives are achievable. Even though if it were practical, 25% doubt it would yield positive results or rescue the country from its economic problems. Only 9 against 41% think that the Zim asset will succeed without external support. ZDI Director Pesai Ruanya told Studio 7 that the major finding of the survey was that government did not consult people, particularly those in rural areas, adding, as a result, it is difficult for people to impress Zim Asset.
And what we find in the report is that their knowledge of the policy document which government is selling to investors, to its citizens, and industrial leaders is not known by the majority of our people, particularly in Mashonaland West. And I think it is a reflection of the national mood in terms of the understanding of government policies.
75% of those who don't believe in Zim Asset's ability to turn around the economy suggested dealing with corruption and bad governance as the solution, with 59% recommending government reform and 45% saying removal of sanctions is the solution. resolution. About 18% said placing Zimbabwe under the Southern African Development Community curatorship is the way to go. Zim Asset requires a $27 billion investment to thrive, yet the country's economy is producing only $3.6 billion annually. Ruanya said a strong recommendation coming from the survey is that government must engage civil society organizations and the citizenry in policy formulation and implementation.
They want government to go back to the people, go back to the basics, and have an informed citizen involvement in the formulation of policy, so that policy does not just become a propaganda tool to say we have this, but it must relate to the existential living conditions and aspirations of the people.
Meanwhile, in a separate story, students at the University of Zimbabwe are up in arms with the administration after authorities banned kissing and hugging among students on campus. According to a circular circulated at one of the university's halls of residence, those found kissing or in intimate positions in the halls of residence, lecture rooms or grounds will be evicted from college. A UZ Students and Zimbabwe National Students Union representative Gift Maposa and Tinotenda Mungu told Studio 7 the new regulations violate students' freedom of association and assembly. They said it was also outrageous as most students entering university were above 18 and some were already parents.
University of Zimbabwe is a tertiary institution and we expect to be treated as adults. So when would they come up with such laws like caught in an intimate position such as kissing? Kissing is something which is actually infringement, because people need to enjoy themselves while at least they're on campus, because they're adults. But when the administration does something like this, it's such an infringement of the freedom and the right to privacy.
University authorities could not be reached for comment, but the students said they would resist the regulations. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up.
When complaining they are not getting, women complain they are not getting enough space in the media.
But first, Chris, a look at regional and international news.
Dozens of gunshots rang out in Canada's parliament buildings in Ottawa after at least one gunman shot a soldier guarding the nearby National War Memorial. Police say one gunman was shot and killed in the main parliament building.
French aviation experts arrived in Russia late yesterday to help investigate the plane crash that killed the chairman of France's leading oil firm earlier this week. The group includes national air safety officials and representatives from the companies that made and operated the private jet, which hit a snowplow during the takeoff from Moscow's Vnukovo airport yesterday on Monday.
India says it has set in place a tracking and surveillance system similar to Nigeria to detect any cases of Ebola in the country as it steps up efforts to keep the virus out of the country. Nigeria has been declared Ebola-free by the World Health Organization.
Participants at a one-day seminar on gender in the media are calling on the media to address gender stereotypes in order to fully empower women. Tatenda Gumbo has details.
Gender activists have expressed concern over the continued negative portrayal of Zimbabwean women in politics by the media, saying journalists should give a balanced and fair gender portrayal of women and girls in their stories in order to influence society in the fight against gender stereotypes. Several journalists and gender activists who attended a seminar today in Harare focusing on gender stereotypes said the media continues to portray women in a negative way despite global attempts to reverse this trend. Media practitioner Simbiso Marimbe told the meeting organized by the Federation of African Media Women that editors should play a key role in enhancing the writing of stories that don't promote gender stereotypes. Marimbe said most media outlets also ignore stories about women's issues.
If you look at the analysis on Zimbabwe News, according to the 2012 report, 14% women in the news against 76% male. And we have 15% of female voices in public media and 13% female voices in private media, according to MMPZ.
She further said gender stereotypes are affecting women in politics.
Here we are talking about women who are holding political positions or in political office. Most of the women actually reported in relation to their marital status, their age, how they relate to men in politics. In the 2005 report of MMPZ, they actually pick out the way in which Elizabeth Macheka, the former prime minister's wife, was referred to as a 35-year-old daughter of long-serving senior ZANU-PF official. And we also have other cases like the wife of Solomon Mujuru, the wife of Robert Mugabe, the wife of so-and-so. They are not mentioned as first ladies or as individual human beings with aspirations to political office. But they are always, always evaluated or judged on the basis of their husbands' or their parents' political links.
Speaking at the same occasion, gender activist Tendai Garwe of Women in Politics said patriarchy is to blame for most of the gender stereotypes.
Patriarchy has what we call four sacred cows. These are like Zim assets, got four pillars. There's family, there's state, there's religion, and there's culture. So these four things will anchor patriarchy, come hell, come high water. I've noticed the way women are portrayed when they comment or are visible is back to these four pillars that anchor and still push for male supremacy.
Media practitioners have for long complained that women are not generally forthcoming when asked for interviews. Marimbe says that there is a long historical backlog between the interaction of media and women.
We have women not able to access the media for many years, and some of them do not have the experience to speak to the media. And, you know, there are these fears that the media will distort what they say or misquote them or things like that. But women have to come to a point where they can actually live above those fears. And yes, that message is being sent through many organizations, Federation of African Media Women, for example, the Women's Trust, I know the Women in Politics Support Unit. They have a lot of programs that they actually get women in politics to engage with media.
While acknowledging the media's concerns, she said there was need for journalists to create bigger pools from which to tap into.
They're not putting an effort in reaching out to a broader spectrum of women. I think there are a lot of women in Zimbabwe that can speak on various issues. But you would find the same male source or experts in agriculture, in economics. They are the same people who are quoted in political stories.
The participants at the one-day seminar generally agreed that Zimbabwe should address gender stereotypes in order to fully empower women. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Tatenda Gumbo.
Thanks, Tatenda. The Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union says the move to hike the price of seed maize by producers is going to affect farmers as they will end up looking for cheap alternatives. The union's president, Wanda Chabikwa, says as a union they do not know the reasons behind these hikes because the seed producers never consulted other stakeholders. This week, farmers discovered that the prices of seed maize had gone up by nearly 30%. A 25-kilogram bag is now selling at prices between $68 and $113, up from between $57 and $96. A 10-kilogram bag now costs between $27.50 and $31, up from between $21 and $24. Chabikwa tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that the situation has been made worse by the fact that the government no longer grants assistance to farmers.
We are so surprised and we are so perplexed to hear that the price of maize seed has gone up by about 30% on the eve of planting. The season is upon us. Our season starts 1 October. We are in the season. We had already made our budgets based on the price of maize seed that we had. We had not seen any reason to expect a price increase. If there is any justification, we believe our colleagues in the trade, our seed houses, should have consulted with us as farmers so that we would understand why they want to increase the price. We are going to engage them and seek clarification. If there is a room for redress, then we will be able to do that.
Do you think that farmers will have any alternatives?
The bulk of our people, they rely on farming. They know they are targeted hectares, so it might lead to reduced hectares, and also it might lead to farmers then resorting to using improper seed. That is, taking part of the harvest and use that as seed. And also, we are seeing our farmers being at the mercy of bogus seed traders.
That was Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union President Wanda Chabikwa in Harare speaking with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
The Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights says there is need for an accelerated information dissemination campaign in light of the Ebola crisis that continues to affect West African countries. Association Chairperson Dr. Rutendo Bonde says although the health ministry has embarked on Ebola awareness campaign for health professionals, more still needs to be done, especially for the general public who are also at risk.
Last week, the senior officials in the Ministry of Health did give a call to say that the country needs 3.5 million to be ready for Ebola, to strengthen the emergency response to Ebola, and that there have been some attempts to educate health professionals. But in terms of mass campaigns to the public on how to protect themselves, you know, that still is very sporadic. And as to real information about the readiness of institutions and the readiness of health professionals to respond, what becomes even more worrying is the impending threat of hospital doctors who issued an ultimatum to state authorities to say that they want to go on strike. If the two events should coincide, the nationwide strike by the hospital doctors and the sentinel cases of Ebola in the country, then we're sitting on a time bomb.
So what would you call on the government and the Ministry of Health to do at this point in time?
Information remains key. With the kind of public health infrastructure that we have, we really need to prevent Ebola cases. We need to be more vigorous at preventing Ebola cases, not only at ports, at airports, and really educating the public so that we don't even have any suspected Ebola cases, and really to give people the advice that they need to stay clear from Ebola.
That was the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, Dr. Rutendo Bonde, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye from Harare.
Time it is. Time for the mailbag. What do we have, Sandy?
Oh, Chris, we're going to read one email today because of lack of time. This one says, hi, guys. Thank you for your hard work that you are doing. It is very good. You must add more years. The good Lord must add more years and a good life. Greetings to the following families, the Mbiba family, Ndebele family, Onya Stembo, Prosper, Amai Prosper, Zibengwa, Kudakwashe, Peter Zibengwa, Job Zibengwa, Nobet Zibengwa, Manuel Zibengwa, all the Zibengwa family, Simba Mpofu, Sharai Mpofu, Sithle Moyo, Timothy Moyo, Sekamocho Moyo, Namosh Jele Moyo, Sikatina Dube, Amai Jele, Hove Njokoya, as the whole from S.L. Mpofu, USA, Leonard ZBE, Mwenezi. Chris, that's all we have time for tonight. Let's recap today's top stories.
Political analysts resolving the ZANU-PF succession dispute say this will not be easy as opposing factions brace for tomorrow's crucial Politburo meeting following First Lady Grace Mugabe's attacks on Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
The International Monetary Fund is projecting Zimbabwe's economy to slightly grow by 3.2% in 2015 from 3.1% this year.
And the Media Institute of Southern Africa says it is concerned by recent attacks and threats against the privately owned media.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milinkomo and Stanikile Mhlanga. This is Sandra Nyaira. Good night.
And this is yours truly, Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.